What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. This is Resistance in Residence, where we profile artists using their gifts to change the world.
This week's feature is producer, multi-instrumentalist, and MC Tariq Eccentric Kazale. Hello, Tariq. Thank you so much for coming to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Kat. I really appreciate it.
I'm really excited about this conversation. I should also say, y'all, that Tariq has very graciously lent us his music, which is now what you are hearing in the introduction to Monday's Palestine Post. So thank you for that. All right, Tariq, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, what's your family like?
Well, I'm half Bay Area, sort of quarter Detroit and a bunch of Palestine, basically. Obviously, as you may know, I'm Palestinian. Both my parents are Palestinian, and you know, we basically, when my parents divorced, we bounced around. Me and my brother were both born in California, and then we kind of moved back and forth between Michigan and the Bay, like too many times to even count. I miscount, you know. And we didn't have phones back then, so you can't just look at the timestamp, right? But yeah, and so essentially, you know, there's the Detroit side of me, which is the very, you know, as you know, Detroit is a very heavily Arab American and Black place, right? And so there's a lot of beautiful kind of cultural mingling that goes on with that, and it wasn't always the case, but now it's much more so, where people are kind of settling into a more kind of revolutionary understanding of solidarity, which is really awesome for Detroit, and the city itself is doing. I mean, it's kind of a beautiful place right now, as it, you know, it always has been, but now I think the artists have, like, from all different worlds have kind of converged there, so it's beautiful to see. And obviously the Bay, what we're dealing with here, I think, with the tech takeover and the kind of the insane amount of just like cultural erasure and like now like the bottom of the hill is closing down, all these things. So for me, like coming from these two places that have been like kind of center points to like the United States' cultural, like actual fabric, right? Like Detroit being this extremely important musical city and the Bay being this extremely important musical place, cultural place, also political place, both places very politicized, you know. You know, it's kind of crazy. All that is like in me, and I try to express that, but it's not always the easiest, you know.
I'm going to tug on this thread a little bit more. The Bay, Detroit, Palestine. I mean, those are three places. If I'm thinking about resistance, culture, politics, movement, those would be top three come to mind.
I know, right? I know. It's true.
I mean, that's sort of that's high key. That's what my daughter would say. That's high key dope. How did I might have just messed that all up.
It's just not 6-7.
Mom, stop. what? How would you say that all of that shapes you both politically, and culturally?
Yeah. Well, as you know, as a long time member of the sort of the wider hip hop community, I started out basically as a hip hop producer, and then I dabbled into the MC world, and then got fully into like the sort of political MC world for a long time with my old group Arab Summit. I think there was a lot of influence from always within my music from like the Detroit sort of electronic music scene, you know. So there was a lot of that built into me. And then with like the Bay Area, with, you know, everything from Hi-Ro to, or California in general, but like Hi-Ro to, you know, Freestyle Fellowship to even to E-40, which is, I'm still a big fan of, you know. So it's, you take what you can, and you don't really know. I feel like I don't really, I still don't, I never know what's influencing me until like way after the fact. And then I listen to some older stuff and I'm kind of like, oh wow, I hear that influence now, you know? Whereas like when I made it, I didn't really hear it. And so I'm still discovering all that. And I feel like, you know, the natural part of it all, the real underpinning is Palestine and my family's, you know, displacement and my family's continued displacement and not being where I belong, in a sense, you know, being in this land that's occupied by this, you know, crazy, insane regime colony, you know. So it's, it's all it all builds something. I'm not sure what it will build. Maybe I'll know that when I'm like 65, looking back at my, 40, saying like, you should have knew better, but I do believe that everybody has that. I think that no matter what, like your tribal background, your sort of geographic background, the culture of the places that you come from will always be deeply like ingrained inside of you as well, And I think it's really important for artists to show that. And one of the beautiful things about hip hop is that geographical kind of like pin that a lot of artists have. And I think that's getting lost nowadays because everybody's just kind of either moving to LA or moving somewhere just to get into that scene, But I always appreciated that. It's like it is kind of tribal. And I know everybody likes to malign tribalism and whatnot, but some of it is actually very useful,
Agreed. When and how did you discover music? What was that journey like?
Well, I come from a musical family. My grandfather played the neya. It's like a Palestinian flute, and he played I think he played qanun too. He sang. That's on my dad's side, and on my mom's side, everybody, like my grandmother, my teta, she always sang in the choir, in church. And my aunties all play piano on my dad's side. My aunties played piano and played the oud, and my dad played percussion, played tabla, Arabic tabla. It's a Arabic drum. And I think we were just born into it. We grew up with a lot of music. There was always something playing. There was always my mom was really into like during the 80s, when I was growing up, my mom listened to a ton of Prince, a lot of Michael Jackson. She listened to a lot of Madonna. So we had a really and also like the old school stuff like War and Joe Bataan and the Beatles, so we had a lot of that growing up. And then on my dad's side, it was more like stylistics and Motown stuff. And also like a lot of Arabic. So, the background is heavy. So I think it was almost like just we were almost destined. I was destined to basically become a musician. It was just impossible not to. And I first picked up the guitar. That was the first instrument I wanted to play was a guitar when I was about 12 years old. And I had this cheap, like $60 piece of crap that, couldn't hold tune, but hey, I worked through it. You know what I mean? So here I am now, right?
Talk about, so I'm gonna say this and I shouldn't have to say it, but I feel like I have to say it these days. Hip hop is inherently political. Those roots, it's what it is, it's what it continues to be,
100%.
despite LA's best efforts.
That's very true.
Walk us from picking up a $60 piece of crap guitar to finding your home in hip hop. And I'll just say, because your bio said, and I think it's important to say, you're considered one of the early founders of Arab American hip hop.
Yeah, that's what they say. That's what people tell me. It's great, one of my best friends, Narcy, told me he's like always hold your founder status, you know what I mean? You hold your pioneer status, and don't be afraid to say that. And I'm starting to take people's wise advice, but
Take my wise advice. If you don't say it, other people will say the opposite about your work for them. So.
Yeah, that's true too. So I will say it, and that's, so and honestly, it was a natural thing. It was, I think, really like just where I was at that time in my life, like skateboarding, like I skateboarded a lot. And when you were a kid in the Bay and you were getting skateboarding videos, we used to hang out at EMB in San Francisco all the time. We'd hang out at Pier 7. And everybody would be passing around the latest skate video from the latest, skateboarding company. And those were full of underground hip hop and full of punk rock, basically. So you were getting this heavy dose of really dope music from the underground, right? And then you'd be like, oh, who's this artist? And they would put the artist down on the bottom, and you'd go out and seek like who's that, and then you buy like the mixtape on Market Street, right? And that was one side of like wanting to. I wanted just to make beats. I was really into like the musical side of everything, and I was kind of scared to rap, right? In a sense, I was nervous about that or timid, shy, and so I started kind of dabbling, asking friends like, who's got a beat machine? What beat machine is dope? Like, what can I do? Like, how do I get into this? And people pointed me towards the ASR and. After saving a lot of money at that time especially, I finally got an ASR and I started making beats. And then when I went back to Detroit during that time, and I was one of the only people that anybody knew that had a beat machine at that time, at least in my high school. And so there was all these freestyle sessions during lunch and all these things. Everybody would be rapping, and you know, sometimes I would beatbox. I'm not very good at it. I never was. But and then I finally like kind of grabbed my courage to sort of start rapping, and everything I talk about was like Palestine and like politics and like, you know, like F. Clinton and you know what I mean, like the 33rd degree and all this other like crazy stuff I used to talk about when I was young. So it was just kind of this thing where I just finally found some courage and I said, whatever, I'm gonna rap with these dudes, and I just did, you know. And then coming back to California, it just continued. And then I actually saw it as artistry for myself, and I pursued it rather than just like sitting on the guitar. I would actually start to write poetry and write lyrics and write, you know, whatever I was feeling. So it actually also opened me up. Hip hop opened me up to like literature in general. Like I became more open to like reading a lot of the classics and things through hip hop, you know, which is beautiful.
I want you to tug on that thread, hip hop opening you up to reading more of the classics.
Oh yeah, I mean, like I never heard of like, for instance, like I remember Common talk about like Taoism. I never heard of Taoism. I was like, what's Taoism? So I went and looked that up. You know, I heard a lot of rappers talking about, you know, like the 5% nation, and I'd look up stuff like that, and then that would lead you to the Nation of Islam, and then you start going into other things that you wouldn't necessarily read on your own, but you were being educated by people who had far more knowledge than yourself, and so. You know, and not only that, there's a lot of references in a lot of classic hip hop tracks to like the classics, you know, like Of Mice and Men or you know, Toni Morrison, or I mean, there's a lot of beautiful stuff in there. So I think that there's, especially in that period of time, I'm saying like the 90s, you know, were just a very philosophical period of in general in music, but I think hip hop specifically, and it's, I think it's underappreciated, you know. And but I always say, like, you know, I probably never would have I never would have read Catch 22 if it wasn't for hip hop, you know what I mean? Like, so
Love that. I love that. What doors, and you can take this literally, figuratively, politically, did music open up for you?
well, I would have never traveled, I could say that, you know. My parents aren't big travelers. You know, my mom wants to be, I guess, in a sense. My dad's been to, I think, Costa Rica once. And, you know, and we didn't really travel. When we were kids, we didn't travel. We went from California to Michigan, and then we went down to Florida to visit our cousins, you know. And one time we went to like upstate New York. So I would have never traveled. And once myself and Will Yeomans, aka Iron Sheik, we sort of discovered each other after a show that I did at the Justice League back in the day in the city. And we kind of joined forces, and he was like purely like an activist rapper, right? And I was on the cusp of like a kind of battle rapper but talked a lot about politics, you know? And also like I made good beats, you know, my beats were dope. So we joined forces, and with that we were hit up by, after that, like we got tons of press because it was like, oh, Palestinian rappers, oh my God, nobody had heard of us. Arab rappers, nobody ever heard of us. And 9/11 happens, and next thing you know, everybody and their mother is knocking on your door wanting to know your perspective, or they're literally like, you know, boycotting you or calling you a terrorist or calling you a terrorist sympathizer or what have you. So, and that obviously gets a lot of attention too. So basically, that's one of the biggest doors, and I'll always appreciate that because I literally saw some of the world, a lot of the world, because of my, you know, because of hip hop, because of music, because of, you know, my passion for this art and for speaking, you know, truth within that context. You know what I mean? I think if I was just some, like, if I was just, you know, like a non-political artist, I don't think I would have gotten as far as I have, right?
Similar but different question. How has music sustained you?
Well, mentally, that's, without it, I wouldn't be here. I would not have survived my 20s without music. It's always grounded me. It's always kept me focused on goals, and it's kept my brain wrinkly because I'm always trying to think of new ways to approach like what I do. Like instead of relying on cliches in life and in my own music, like, 'cause you know, you can get caught up in your own cliches. You can find yourself repeating the same kind of statements and saying the same things all the time. And I think music has always kept me on my toes because I always want to try to like break what I did the time before, or like alter what I did before, or try different, like a totally different methodology than I did before. And that also trained my brain to kind of do that in life, you know. So I feel like music has given me like this kind of ability to sort of be fluid, you know what I mean? And that's definitely, I mean, I would say that that's the biggest impact that it's had on me, keeping me open, you know what I mean?
In this moment, Tariq, where this genocide seems to have no end, this iteration, excuse me, this iteration of the genocide seems to have no end. How is your craft sustaining you now?
It's a really it's kind of an emotional question, right? Or it's an emotional answer. I think the most impactful thing that has happened during this genocide is that I've learned somehow to not completely internalize it and be so angry at myself for not doing more, like not just going there and doing everything, because I can't go there. I can't put, like, no one's allowed in Gaza. Like, no one's allowed out of Gaza. No, they can't even get medical supplies right now, and they're continuously bombing it. So I think there, my art was, because I was offered so many different project opportunities, and because so many people and I collaborated in the last couple of years, and because you know, notably with a Tansic gallery in Cleveland, with M. Carmen Lane, and with Jenna Hamid in New York at J7 Gallery, and with my music being and my instruments being put in their galleries, that opened me back up to not just being this dark studio cat, right, who's just in my head, completely just obliterated, right, just like, I don't know. I hate the word traumatized, because I mean, whatever, we're all traumatized, you know. It's like it's overused, but you know what I mean. We're just like emotionally obliterated, watching just our people being torn to shreds every single day by this demented colony of sickos. So, I think in the last 2 years, my music got really dark, darker than it already was, because it's already dark, right? And it's, but it also had hope. It wasn't just darkness for the sake of darkness. There was hope, because I knew that, like, if I don't make my music as a Palestinian, if my voice doesn't get heard, or my perspective doesn't get heard, then, you know, the absence of us is an amplification of them. You know what I mean? So no matter what, and I realized that, I was like, no, we do have to speak. And a lot of Palestinians were like, I can't make art right now, because how could I do that? Like, it's like celebrating during a time of genocide. I'm like, no. I disagree with that. I think right now you have to make art. You have to make as much art as you possibly can. You have to make as much music as you possibly can, because our people need it. The people in solidarity with us need it, because they need to hear our voices, because the Zionist voices are so amplified. They're on every channel, every minute of the day. They're on every commercial. You can't even watch a Warriors game without some Zionist commercial coming on talking about something. It's like so insidious. So we have to counter that. And I think I realized that in this time, that like I can't just be. I have to step up, and we all have to step up and make our art, instead of sitting there saying like, oh, it's, you know, dancing on the graves of our martyrs. I don't believe that. I believe that we're honoring our martyrs by creating and by pushing that out there, you know. I don't know if that answered the question, but
That was the answer you gave, so it must have.
yeah, you know, I mean, that's the thing. And also, like, there is a lot of Palestinian art out there that is not speaking to what's happening. And you know, like I mentioned before, you know, art without a message is just Taylor Swift, right? And none of us can be Taylor Swift, nor should we ever be Taylor Swift.
Scary that there are, and there are indeed people that want to be Taylor Swift.
All capitalism, you know, that's what it is. It's just, here's your crap, you know. It's just like a McDonald's burger. Here's your crap, go ahead. It's capitalism, you know.
This is probably a pointless digression, but the insidiousness when you were talking. So I'm born and raised Las Vegas, and then I ended up in Oakland by way of South Central. But I was home, not this holiday, the last holiday, Thanksgiving, and I was driving to my mom's old neighborhood. Anyway, it's right at like the intersection of the strip, sort of like where people coming from the strip and they're go moving into downtown. It's a very, very busy intersection, and there's a souvenir like tech. It's this tacky corner of souvenir shops and banks and whatever. And I was sitting at the light and I looked up And there was, I mean, it's probably like real spit, probably almost as big as my 800 square foot ADU billboard, like those electronic billboards.
Yeah.
And it was about, the Israeli victims.
Yeah.
And it
Yeah.
was real subtle, right? Like if you actually, if you really weren't dialed into the politics, like you might not actually understand what was happening to your brain in that moment. But I was like, wow. And when I thought about that traffic, I talk about them as the minions of Zionist communication, right? And how they really have excelled at weaponizing words and wordsmithing
Oh
to
yeah,
shape narrative.
and they're hand in hand. I mean, look at what happened with remember we used to talk about the billboard company. What was that? That they're owned by like these crazy evangelicals and with the right wing agenda. And those people in the Zionists are like they are connected. So, boom, there you go. Why do you think all these billboards are out there? Why do you think all these commercials are there? Because these media companies are owned by these right wing elements, and they're invested in weapons corporations. They're invested in oil companies. They're invested in, gas companies. And these are all the things that Israel's made for. It's made to create a wedge. It's a colonial outpost to make sure that weapons get tested, to make sure that indigenous people get destroyed and maimed and disemboweled too, and to steal oil, to steal resources, and to, control the like half a continent right next to it and most of the continent that it's even on. It's disgusting. Yeah, well, it's not a pointless digression, I guess. There's and talk about capitalism, it's Vegas, right? It's like you think that capitalism is theft, and then you go and you find a capitalist place that steals even the little bit left that you have, right? They're like, "Oh, your paycheck." Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy.
I want to dance with around this question with you. We're almost at time. Beautiful displays of resistance, art or otherwise, that you carry with you in this moment.
Other ways that I feel like I'm resisting.
Beautiful ways of it could be you, it could be what you've seen,
Yeah.
ways in which you're watching artists or others resist that you carry with you, that you wake up and you're like, bet.
Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of because my wife and I co-founded an organization called Prosthetics for Palestine. And seeing that take off and seeing that how much we raised in just over a year is really amazing. And how many different people from every walk of life have contributed, whether throwing their own little house party fundraisers or have donated to the org itself. That's amazing. Seeing solidarity from every corner of the earth is absolutely beautiful. And also watching our people learn more about other people's struggles is also like a really important part of this, because I feel like it's politicized a lot of apolitical Palestinians, because they don't have the privilege just to sit on their butts and be like, I just want to go to college, or I just want to do this, or I just want to do that, or what have you. It's like, now if you're not speaking out, you're DJ Khaled, you know what I'm saying? And nobody wants to be a DJ Khaled, and I think the beauty of that is that to be one with your resistance is to also understand that your resistance wouldn't exist without the resistance of others that came before us, and how we really wouldn't exist without, the South African anti-apartheid movement. We wouldn't really exist without, the black liberation movement in America with the Black Panthers or what have you. We wouldn't exist without, the American Indian movement. We wouldn't exist without, all the anti-fascist movements around the world. And the Irish even come to mind. Like, we wouldn't exist without like the Irish resistance to British colonization, and we are an extension of British colonization. Our predicament. So I say that I believe that we've learned a lot from others now. Finally, some of us have always been on this, but a lot of us have not. You know what I mean? And I think that's really one of those things. That gives me. It gives me hope, and also gives me a little bit of it lessens my misery, let's put it that way.
Tariq, anything I haven't asked you, you want to uplift anything you're working on? What's next for you? We're going to link to your prosthetics for Palestine for sure.
Oh, cool. Awesome. I guess my new record, Waltony 77, is it's streaming everywhere. It's distributed by Empire Records, which is Palestinian owned, which is great. And I have another album coming out pretty soon called Flowers for Algorithm that should be out within the next like 8 months or so, working on that. And also, we're going to be doing a lot of fundraisers for prosthetics. We're going to be doing a lot of fundraisers for all the different orgs that are here in the Bay that are doing amazing work. We got Mecca, we got AROC, we have, PCRF, we have some PYM. We have a lot of great people doing a lot of great work. And I'm hella appreciative to all of them and to you as well, and to everybody that listens to your show. That's you, this is the Bay, and this is, thank God we're still here. You know what I mean? Like, thank God we're still here. They haven't gotten rid of us yet,
Not yet. Not yet.
Not yet, but we will resist.
Right on. Family, you've been listening to Law and Disorder. I'm your host, Kat Brooks, and this week's Resistance in Residence feature is producer, multi-instrumentalist, and MC Tariq Eccentric Kazela. Eccentric is also the composer of our Monday Palestine Post introduction music. Tariq, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate you.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA, that's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. Our Resistance in Residence theme music was composed by Jesse Strauss. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis. And subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listeners. If you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.